of us applied to the Southeast Asia Youth Leaders Tour. We loved saying the acronym out loud. I submitted my Salit application last night. I got in touch with my Salit interviewer. The program was supposed to be highly selective. They only accepted 4% of the nearly 1,000 high school juniors who applied. Kevin, Jack, and I never discussed that part. We were hoping for a miracle. No, we expected a miracle. For a month after submitting our applications, we spent every lunch fantasizing about our all-expenses-paid trip together. What happens at Salit became a running joke. It was an awkward day when I didn't get in. We had plans to meet at Kevin's locker at exactly 2:58 p.m. on the day results were coming out. Kevin and Jack could hardly contain their excitement. They'd crushed their interviews the week before. I felt less certain. Earth Club, Model UN, Iranian Instruments. You're all over the place, Mr. Ferdowsi, I remember my interviewer saying over Skype. Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Needless to say, I was stumped. At 3 p.m., we refreshed our phones one more time. Kevin and Jack jumped in the air almost simultaneously, high-fiving and pounding their fists. I looked up from my phone screen and forced a smile. Their expressions dropped. Admissions processes aren't perfect, Jack said, patting my shoulder. He was always more sympathetic to my shortcomings than Kevin. Jack, the aspiring diplomat. Kevin, the aspiring economist. I knew exactly why I wasn't selected. My friends were more qualified than I was, plain and simple. Later that day, after the sun had fallen and a soft gust of wind replaced the stuffy air, I went out again for a walk around the neighborhood. I needed to clear my mind. Being so close to GW in Georgetown, DuPont Circle was one of those places where the average age plummets on weekends. Flocks of college-looking people had swarmed to the local restaurants and bars on this Friday night. All the groups looked the same, mostly white, attractive, and an even guy-to-girl ratio. The guys looked nothing like my friends from home. They were dressed in pastel-colored shorts and Oxford shirts, downing beer and bellowing phrases like, "What's up, player?" and "No way, bro!" The girls were another story. There was one in particular who spoke exclusively through her nose. She stood outside a Spanish restaurant, stick-thin and brunette, suffocating in her little black dress. One by one, her girlfriends arrived, and she greeted them the same way. "Oh my God! How are you?" High-pitched, expressionless. It was like a bad horror movie. Later, I noticed an elderly Muslim woman sitting alone outside a coffee shop, her hair covered in a flowery hijab. She started talking to this African-American man who was wearing horn-rimmed glasses and a tweed jacket. The two clearly didn't know each other, but their conversation was filled with gestures and smiles nonetheless. A few doors down, a father and son stood before a tiny patch of purple flowers. The son, who was maybe 5 years old, turned to his dad and gave a high-pitched assertion. "Blue!" The dad retorted, "Purple!" They went off on a list of colors. "Pink! Lavender!" Talking over each other like snappy firecrackers. This Friday night crowd felt all too familiar. Everyone was a friend, a father, someone something. Short bursts of memories went off in my head. The same ones that had been haunting me since I came to D.C. Perhaps I couldn't shake off my past. It wasn't something you could leave behind or bury in the ground. I found myself back outside Tom's Foolery. I was tempted to go inside for some Etch-a-Sketch or Mario Kart, a fitting blast from the past, but they were checking IDs. The bouncer turned me away, and within seconds I heard a crack of thunder. The sound punched at my bones, and it started to drizzle. I ran back to the hostel, but not before getting soaked by the torrential downpour that ensued. Chapter 13. The sun shone relentlessly on Saturday morning. I trekked more than 2 miles up Connecticut Avenue to the National Zoo, the back of my neck burning, and by the end of it, I was sweating through every fiber of my t-shirt. I hated sweat. I realized no one was going around saying they loved sweat, but I hated it for so much more than the physical discomfort. It reminded me of all the other things in the world that made me uncomfortable. It reminded me of my lanky body, which people were always commenting on. Eat something, why don't you? You look like you could disappear into thin air. Because how could I be self-conscious about my body image if I wasn't fat, right? It reminded me of salt water, which was half the reason I couldn't stand the beach. Being shirtless was the other half. And it reminded me of sex, because I hadn't done it yet, which was fine a few years ago, but was becoming less fine, or at least it felt that way. When I reached the zoo, I noticed that the space inside the gates resembled my quiet cul-de-sac back in Pennsylvania, with a granite ledge where the houses would be. I sat on the part of the ledge that would have been my house, not for any sentimental reason, but because it was the only dry space. Most of the ledge was still soaking wet from the night before. I figured the sun needed more time. A few minutes later, Fiora biked through the gates and braked abruptly in front of my house on the cul-de-sac. She skidded just past the doormat. "Where'd you get that bike?" I asked suspiciously. "It's mine," Fiora said, ruffling her hair. She wasn't wearing a helmet. "You own a bike?" "Of course I own a bike," she said, locking it in the rack near the entrance. "I wouldn't have given you the other one if I didn't." I looked stumped.
"The other one? You mean
the stolen one?"
"Which didn't come with a helmet either." Now that I thought about it, I was really quite lucky to have survived that accident with just a few scratches. If my mother knew...
"I mean what?" Fiora raised one eyebrow. "Never mind." She perked her ears. "You know what I hear?" I listened for a second. "The soft mating call of a tufted sparrow?" "No, you goddamn sap. I hear the lions all the way in the back of the zoo, roaring at us to get a fucking move on."
Without so much as a nod, Fiora led me into the zoo. I trailed behind like an obedient puppy on a leash. I was following through with her dare. We walked down a stone path with benches and concession stands. No animals in sight. I couldn't even hear any birds. I wondered whether Fiora had taken me to an imaginary zoo, or a sexual health clinic, or a cancer support group like she had joked. Maybe Fiora really didn't have any boundaries. We crossed a small bridge to enter the Asia Trail, the first section of the zoo, where we were surrounded by gentle streams and gangly bamboo. Unruffled silence. A shadow fell upon us and cooled the back of my neck. The entire world shrank into that 20-foot radius, and for a few seconds, time swelled into an eternity. It was the kind of stuff you'd expect Fiora to scoff at, but instead, she took it all in, literally. She paused over the stream with her hands on her hips, puffing her chest to fill it with 1,256 square feet of oxygen. Before I knew it, we stood face to face with an animal exhibit. A case of mistaken identity. Sloth bears are not sloths. Early biologists mistakenly thought sloth bears were very large sloths. Both have shaggy fur and long curved claws, but sloth bears are not related to slow-moving sloths. The actual sloth bear was nowhere to be seen. I didn't blame it. I wouldn't have wanted to live in an exhibit either. The word sounds so impersonal, like it needs a letter or numerical label. Exhibit A, or Exhibit 3.1.5. "The sloth's not home," I told Fiora.
"Patience, dude. Just look around."
"Maybe he's still hung over from his Friday night," I joked.
"Maybe he ran away," Fiora said.
Pretty soon we dismissed the case of the missing sloth bear, and we went looking instead for clouded leopards. We followed a curvy path that was concealed by trees and hedges. It felt strangely private.
"Can I ask you a question?"
Fiora gave me a look. I gave her a look back that said, "Okay, yes, technically that was a question."
"I didn't even have to use any words," she remarked. "But yes, you may ask me another question."
"The other day you said there was too much going on in your life, that you weren't doing this out of boredom or because you feel bad for me, this pickup challenge, but because it takes your mind off the other stuff."
"First of all, I don't feel bad for you. You're refreshingly genuine and flawed, but not in a fucked up way. I like that.
Second, what's your question?
I held back a smile at Fiora's comment. I like that.
Aren't you flawed too?
Excuse me?
I'd been curious about the details of Fiora's discombobulated situation, and I was feeling ballsy enough behind these green walls to bring it up.
Sorry, that wasn't my question, I said. I'm just saying, I know all these half-facts about you, but I feel like I don't have the full picture.
Fiora laughed shyly, like she was aiming for confidence, but fell just short.
What do you want to know?
Lucky for me, I had an arsenal of questions ready to fire. I started with her dad.
He's a workaholic, she began.
Her tone was raw and exposed.
I didn't see much of him growing up, especially after the divorce.
Why'd your parents split up?
Because they're terrible adults. One shut down after a tragic life event, and the other had a drug problem. Not exactly a compatible pairing.
Your mom's got to be doing better if you visited her last weekend, right?
Geez, do we really have to talk about this?
Clearly, I'd struck a chord with Fiora's mom. Had she relapsed? Or was there something about her new life in Philly that rubbed Fiora the wrong way? I stopped thinking these questions when I realized I might actually say one of them out loud. Sorry, I said, kicking at the dirt trail.
No worries.
From the corner of my eye, I saw Fiora turning her face and smiling. She knew I felt embarrassed. This almost evened out the playing field, the fact that I had suffered at the hands of Fiora's predicament for just 1 second. Her pain had to be orders of magnitude worse, but still. We turned around after realizing we had missed the clouded leopard. Halfway up the curved path, a yellow squirrel leapt out and scurried in front of us.
What's her name?
Fiora asked. Mustard, I replied. All of a sudden, the squirrel sprinted out again. Fiora almost tripped, because this time Mustard stopped mid-sprint and glared at us, the pesky humans who were arrogant enough to assign them a gender and name.
Silly Mustard, Fiora said. You know what's an even weirder name?
I knew where she was going with this. Definitely Fiora.
Suck it,
she said, eyeing me intensely.
Where'd your parents come up with a name like that anyway?
In Farsi, it means quiet. It's not really a common name. My mom and dad wanted something unique, and they were hoping I'd be a quiet baby, so boom, sock it.
I bet you were the whiniest baby, she said. I bet you cried ironically all the time.
Still do, I said proudly.
Really?
Shit. I thought I was making a smooth comment when in fact I just admitted to being a teenage crybaby. I guess, sometimes. Just with my dad, really. He puts a lot of pressure on me to figure out my career. You know, apply myself and get my life together.
You're lucky he cares, Fiora said.
Are you freaking kidding me? I burst out. It's the worst. I'm not even a senior in high school, and he expects me to know exactly what I'm doing for the next 400 years of my life. Focus, focus, fucking focus. Like I need to discover the one thing I'm passionate about tomorrow, or in 5 years? And it has to be something practical, too, because, well, your mom and I immigrated to America and worked hard so that you can have a better life. What if I decide that the one thing I want to do for the rest of my life isn't law or medicine or engineering? That I'm not going to make buckets of money?
He would explode.
I can't just wake up and say I'm going to write crossword puzzles for the rest of my days. I don't have that stupid luxury.
Okay, okay, Fiora said, looking down and tensing up her jaw.
I think we passed the clouded leopard again, I said softly. The clouded leopard was hidden behind a tall, perfectly trimmed hedge at the center of the loopy path. It was the first zoo animal I'd seen all day, perched atop the highest branch in its zoo habitat. My eyes traced the soft, splashy black spots on the leopard's fur. The kids around us giggled and yelped, and I became giddy, too. My fingers tingled, knees fidgeted, all that. But then I noticed something. The clouded leopard did not actually look happy.
It upset me that no one else was the least bit concerned for its happiness.
What a nice place to take a nap, one boy shouted, tugging his mom's arm. Make it do something, whined another.
I looked over at Fiora. She had this hollow expression on her face, a mirror image of the clouded leopards. It was as if they were saying to each other, All right, yeah, they'll see whatever they want to see. Hey, I said, tapping her shoulder. Look, I'm sorry for my soliloquy of sucky parenting over there. I didn't mean to get fired up like that. Then, almost in sync, Fiora and the leopard shook themselves back into motion. Chapter 14. We finally reached the panda exhibit, and Fiora smiled wickedly.
This is where you're going to pick her up,
I grimaced. I could feel my body turning inside out, like the prank my swim teammates used to pull on my duffel bag. They would dump all my stuff out, turn it inside out, throw everything back in, and zip it shut so that it looked like a chicken nugget. The prank was called nuggeting, real clever. At swim meets, I would get butterflies in my stomach right before diving into the pool. Fiora didn't even give me a diving board. She pushed me into the deep end, retreated to the benches, and crossed her legs. She might as well have brought popcorn and a jumbo soda. She was ready for a show. I took a deep breath. All I had to do was find a girl, get her number, and maintain some amount of dignity. Boom, $50. Easy enough when there's a cute panda exhibit, right? Except the panda, like its sloth brethren, was noticeably missing. Look! Shouted a heavy man with an even heavier southern accent, pointing his finger below the guardrail. There it is! Everyone looked down. These two twins even turned their faces toward each other and whacked noses. The man let out a roaring laugh. He was pointing at a squirrel. The rest of us were less amused.
He's in the tree!
Exclaimed a girl with turquoise highlights in her blonde hair. She was wearing a yellow-striped halter top and looked about my age. This feels creepy, I thought, rocking back and forth on my heels and toes. I took a deep breath and stepped forward to say, Swoop! An older man came out of nowhere and curled her into his arms. He planted a big wet kiss on her now undesirably thin lips. Pickup fail number one. I looked back at Fiora with the most desperate puppy dog face, wide eyes and all. She pretended not to notice. The panda was, in fact, hiding high up in the tree. It was hardly noticeable, except for a patch of fur where the black turned to white. I didn't even know pandas could climb trees. Everyone around me was twisting and bending to get the best glimpse of this high-up, distant son of a panda. One girl didn't seem to care, instead doling out pieces of bread crust to a flock of pigeons. I'm pretty sure there's an underground bird operation going on here, I said just loud enough to feel like I tried, hoping she wouldn't actually hear me.
Do I know you?
Sorry. I wasn't talking to... She got up and smiled sweetly. Me.
You were talking to me. Don't worry. I'm curious. What's this underground bird operation you speak of?
The girl was curvy and cute, wearing jeans and a hot pink V-neck with sneakers. Her hair was tied back in a tight ponytail. I looked behind me to make sure Fiora was paying attention.
Well, obviously the birds were planted around the zoo to...
I needed to come up with something clever.
To eat all the... from the other animals, you know?
Shit. I was initially thinking shit, literal shit, because that was my expletive reaction. But because I wasn't a complete freak, I stopped myself. Birds eat bread, not shit, or feces. Wait, saying feces could make me sound intelligent. Or better yet, bowel movements, I said proudly. The girl's face turned inexplicably sour.
Ew, what's wrong with you?
She harumphed, as if I had actually splattered feces all over her cheap pink blouse, and stormed off. The bird stuck around. Now I was the crazy bird person. Clearly, Fiora had set me up to fail. She had picked up on my impressive ability to crash and burn. From the bike accident, to my attempts at getting Professor Mallard's attention, all the way to this pickup there. She'd figured me out in just a few days. Here's a guy who always takes the first step, and he always trips. And it is kind of funny when he trips, like a kitten trying to climb out of a fishbowl. I took some artistic license with the last bit.
I hope the panda comes down, a girl said.
I kept staring ahead, thinking of the kitten, pretending not to hear an opportunity for pickup fail number 3.
That might have been a more effective pickup line, she added, instead of that silly bird comment.
Everyone knows people who talk about birds are crazy. I looked quickly over my shoulder to glance at this mystery girl. She seemed to be about my age, wearing a gray t-shirt tucked into a pencil skirt that stopped just above the knees. She was pretty. Not edgy or drop-dead gorgeous, but pretty.
Wouldn't that make her crazy too? I asked.
All girls are crazy, she said, except me. I'm Jeanette.
Jeanette shot her hand out. I stared for a second, like a prisoner of war meeting his rescuer for the first time. Then I shook her hand. It was a firm handshake, and my expression must have revealed my surprise, because she reacted immediately.
Firm handshake. Part 2 of an effective pickup.
Are you picking me up?
No, she answered, as if my question were a totally reasonable one. I'm just helping you get better at it. I don't appreciate ineffectiveness in any form.
She paused and bit her lip.
Also, if you don't mind me making a few more observations, your eye contact wasn't exactly direct, and your tone was hesitant at best.
Jeanette spoke, no, lectured, with the authority of a professor. Every word that came out of her mouth had staccato, like logs crackling in a fireplace.
How magnanimous of you, I said.
Big words felt right for our conversation.
You're welcome.
I looked around, unnerved, and Jeanette raised a dubious eyebrow. She was about as interested as the clouded leopard. Fiora, on the other hand, was struggling to contain her laughter back on the bench.
Your choice of a pickup venue is also quite baffling, Jeanette continued.
We were only half-facing each other, like stage actors reading scripted dialogue. I didn't pick the venue. A friend picked it.
You're with a friend?
No, no, I said quickly. It was more of a friendship contract. Out of nowhere, someone handed me a small digital camera, and before I knew it, a family of Asian tourists stood posing in front of me.
If I were your lawyer, I would deem that contract null and void, Jeanette said as I took 2 pictures, horizontal and vertical, making sure to get the panda in the shot.
Are you a lawyer?
I gave the camera back.
Someday. I just finished my freshman year at Liberty University, pre-law. I'm interning at a think tank this summer. You?
I'd never heard of Jeanette's college, but the bigger issue was that I didn't attend any college at all. There was no way Jeanette would keep talking to me if she found out I was still in high school. So I lied.
I am interning for Professor Cecily Mallard at Georgetown.
I gulped and smiled from the side of my mouth, like a cartoon character.
I'm a research assistant.
What kind of research?
Grit. It's the psychology of success and perseverance. I'm studying important historical figures who accomplished amazing feats by, persisting.
That sounds like a fascinating subfield.
Jeanette stopped mid-sentence. If a face could kick itself, that was exactly what Jeanette did with hers.
Hold on. I'm sorry. This is wrong. I'm doing precisely what you did with that poor girl. I didn't mean it. I was simply calling attention to your subpar pickup line. And in doing so, I'm now somehow picking you up. My magnanimous individual agency became a pickup line of its own.
This is wrong.
No, no, I blurted, worried I was losing my one shot at winning this dare. This is totally the universe speaking. It's for sure like an act of God.
Jeanette's face instantly unkicked itself. She was beaming.
I like the way you think. Did I mention my name? I'm sorry. I'm Jeanette.
Scott, I said. I had the feeling that even though Jeanette had commented on my poor pickup skills, she didn't do this very often. That put me at ease.
Care to check out the elephant? I asked.
Jeanette shrugged her shoulders.
Sure,
I interpreted. I looked smugly back at the bench where Fiora had been sitting.
She wasn't there. I didn't actually care to see the elephant, but I thought it would be tactical to see one more animal exhibit before asking Jeanette for her number. Jeanette was generally an interested person. She wasn't interesting, per se, but she was interested. The elephant was living large. It had a freaking amusement park all to itself. There were giant tire swings on metal chains, patches of trees surrounding small ponds. The space could have fit another zoo. The panda might have been the star of the National Zoo, but the elephant was king. Wild elephants move 10 to 30 kilometers a day, Jeanette commented. It sounds silly, but they don't mobilize themselves purely for food and water. They have to fight boredom.
Fight boredom? I scoffed. I fight boredom every day.
I thought about how Fiora would have responded to my joke. She would have scoffed right back and called me a boredom-fighting superhero. Pow! Whack! Kaboom! Jeanette wasn't much of a joker. Confining elephants to a small space with minimal autonomy can lead to serious behavioral problems. Increased aggression, chewing their own body parts, unnatural lethargy. These are all problems that would inevitably shave time off the elephant's lifespan. All of this space is an investment in the elephant's longevity.
Can't have elephant suicide, I joked.
That would be tragic, Jeanette said. Though I can't imagine how it would manage. I could tell Jeanette was smart, insanely smart. The kind of smart that demanded to be noticed and brought to mind words like brainy and sharp as a tack. She was the girl whose hand shot up each time a teacher asked a question. The girl who forced that teacher to go, "Does anyone besides Jeanette know the answer?" She'd sit there in her seat and squirm anxiously while no one else answered. But more than that, Jeanette's world was black and white, no gray. Because if there was one thing I'd figured out about this girl, it was this. Her brain was confident. It might look squishy like other brains, but it was made of sharp as anything tacks. Jeanette insisted on seeing more of the Asia Trail. I noticed a pattern at each exhibit. I would make a stupid comment to loosen her up, and Jeanette would follow up with an intelligent observation. We were never quite in sync. Take the pink flamingos. I'd never seen so many flamingos in one place. They sounded like clown cars in a traffic jam, honking over each other. It was a beautiful cacophony of noise, but Jeanette focused on their feathers. She hypothesized that the zoo was putting artificial pigment in the flamingos' food to keep their feathers pink. I was skeptical, but Jeanette didn't do skepticism. She marched right up to the nearest zoo employee and demanded an answer. Everything had to be black or white. Or pink. Anyway, the guy looked at her funny. He said he was on his way to feed the panda, but Jeanette wouldn't let him leave. So he reluctantly corroborated her hypothesis. I patted her on the back, because that was the closest thing to an A-plus I could give her. Inside the bird center, we found a pond of whistling ducks. Apparently, they didn't actually whistle very much. So I blew my own tunes. Jeanette groaned. I don't understand why Americans idolize birds, she complained. We name our sports teams after them. Ravens, Cardinals, Seahawks. We have state birds. We've even made a hobby out of bird watching.
Maybe it comes from an inner human desire to fly, I said.
That would be silly. We have airplanes for that. Jeanette had moved to D.C. 2 weeks ago and was intent on making this the most adventurous summer of her life. She'd already visited 5 Smithsonian museums, and now she could check off the National Zoo. I suppose we had different definitions of adventure. Unbeknownst to Jeanette, mine involved asking for her number, which I checked off promptly after the bird center. It wasn't an intense or exciting ask, because it felt like another scene from the script we were reading. We played our parts well. This predictability put me at ease, and the end result was weirdly satisfying. Not electrifying, not frustrating, just satisfying. Saying goodbye to Jeanette felt like leaving school on a regular day. It marked the completion of a task that I had to do. I walked over to the zoo's entrance, where I found Fiora. That felt like running into a bulldozer. Literally, she shoved me in the chest.
Did you get it?
I played dumb.
Get what?
Herpes, Fiora said.
Pencil Skirt is a total slut, I could tell.
Ha!
I laughed just a single laugh, like a snooty 1920s aristocrat. Or Sherlock Holmes.
Ha! Elementary, my dear Fiora.
Pencil Skirt was actually super nervous. She introduced herself twice. But yes, to answer your question, I got it. Show me. I took out my phone and scrolled down to Jeanette's name. Jeanette Dumont.
Jeanette Dumont, Fiora read. 540-555-8309. Got it.
Got it? Huh? She ignored me, tapping at her phone screen.
Have you texted her yet?
No, I literally just left her.
And sent.
What in the... What? What did you send? Fiora showed me her phone. It was a text message. Hey, Scott here. It was great to meet you and hang out just now. Thanks for showing me around the animals. I'm actually going out with some GW friends tonight around U Street. Care to join?
Fiora.
My jaw dropped.
When? How?
When did you even write that?
While I was waiting for the two of you to finish your lovely stroll.
She smiled so wide that her eyes became tiny slits, slicing into what little dignity I had left.
You're insane, I said. Certifiably insane. There's no way she'll actually
buzz, buzz. Fiora read the message to herself. She smiled.
What?
I said, leaning in to see it. Fiora turned her phone away. The phone with a text for me.
What did she say? You really must have made an impression on her, Socket.
I did? She read the message out loud in a squeaky mouse-like voice.
Hi, yes, I would love to.
Fiora paused.
But didn't you say you're doing research at Georgetown, winky face? I don't understand why you're hanging out with GW kids. Dot, dot, dot.
Fiora snapped out of her Jeanette impression.
This girl doesn't understand why you're hanging out with GW kids? Who the fuck does she think she is?
She's actually really smart. Fiora rolled her eyes. Whatever, she said. Then she smirked.
Wait, you told her you work at Georgetown?
I may have taken a lesson or two from your playbook.
Oh, man, Fiora said, chuckling to herself. What have I done to you, Socket?
Well, first you dared me to pick up a girl, and I did, so you owe me $50.
Fair,
she said, reaching into her back pocket. She handed me a crumpled 50. More recently, I continued, you told Jeanette we're all hanging out tonight. Mind explaining that?
We're going to a bar called St. X.
All right, well, thanks for the heads up. How am I supposed to get in?
I already texted Trent, Fiora said, unlocking her bike from the rack. He's going to get you that guy's ID, Carlos or whatever.
Okay, I said, feeling a little nervous. I should probably get your number so we can be in touch and coordinate plans, right? Fiora gave me her number and took off while I was saving it to my contacts. I ran and caught up to her, and she rode slowly as we made our way down Connecticut Avenue. I sweated even more than in the morning, but I didn't feel embarrassed around Fiora, because walking back with her felt like the last day of school, and parting ways outside the hostel felt like the last bell. I knew I'd see her soon, but still. Something about Fiora made each goodbye pinch like it could be the last.
Chapter 15. I arrived at Cafe St. X a few minutes early. I power walked the whole way over, because fast walking is the moving equivalent of nervous fidgeting. I didn't want to wait outside the bar by myself, so I did a loop around the block. The second time I arrived at Cafe St. X, Fiora was there.
So, where's Pencil Skirt? She said. I thought of all of us, she'd be the most punctual.
No clue. Maybe she panicked and changed her mind, I said. Fiora shrugged. She was wearing a black tank top and baggy parachute pants, an outfit that reassured me St. X was not a fancy pants establishment. I wore the same polo and corduroys I'd been wearing all week. Turns out there were washing machines in my hostel. So instead of spending money on new clothes, I spent some quarters washing the ones I had. A few minutes passed.
Are any of your other friends showing up? I asked.
Don't worry about it, Fiora muttered.
She bit her lower lip, and I stared at the ground. It was going to be uncomfortable for both of us if Jeanette flaked. But she didn't.
Hey, Scott,
Jeanette said, coming in for a firm hug. Her boobs pressed into my chest forcefully, which made me flinch. Then she turned to Fiora.
Hi, I don't believe we've met. I'm Jeanette.
She extended her arm.
Scott and I met today at... Well, yeah, I know the story.
Fiora shook Jeanette's hand skeptically, fish-like.
Pleasure to meet you.
You know that expression, two worlds collide? That. Handshake. By normal standards, I shouldn't have been invested in either of their worlds. I'd only known Fiora for a few days, and Jeanette for a few hours. But here I was, orbiting aimlessly within a universe of girls.
Shall we go inside? Jeanette proposed.
We have to wait for Trent, I said. Trent's going to be late, Fiora said. He can meet us inside.
Yeah, but remember, Trent has that thing that I need. I was trying to be discreet.
Right, Fiora said. Your fake ID. I forgot you're like a baby.
I gave Fiora the quickest death glare. Jeanette giggled.
Freshman problems, she said sympathetically, fumbling through her wallet to show off her own fake ID. It's my older sister Frankie's license. She's the wild one in the family. Left Virginia, lives in Brooklyn now. Frankie says I should have fun this summer.
Technically, we were all underage, but Jeanette had no idea just how under my age was. She didn't need to know. Trent arrived what felt like an hour later with a lost expression on his face. He seemed focused on something else, muttering an excuse about how he'd gotten held up with his coworker Carlos. He hugged Fiora absently, and then he snapped on, introducing himself like a gentleman to Jeanette, who practically gawked in his presence. She must have been thinking, am I really with Scott when I just met this hunk? Trent handed me Carlos's ID. Memorize everything, he said, in case the bouncer gives you shit because you don't have a 5 o'clock shadow like Carlos. Or because I'm not Hispanic. I quickly memorized Carlos Barroso Valderrama Zambrano's insane name, height, address, birthday, and organ donor status. Yes, he'll give you his kidneys. The bouncer didn't even ask for any of it. He just took a long look at the ID, then my face, then the ID again, and when I itched my nose, he took one last suspicious look at me. I held my breath. The others were already inside, waiting for me, watching nervously by the door. Go ahead, the bouncer mumbled. I shot past him and, wow, my ears felt like they were going to explode. I didn't think it was possible to scream my own thoughts, but I also didn't realize that Café Saint X was actually the inside of a giant boombox. Top 40 beats blasted like hammers, hacking away at my eardrums. We all followed Fiora, who led the way toward either the back or a rack. Did I mention it was loud? Saint X was also packed. Everyone stood around in awkward circles, each group sardined against another. Sleazeball bros bumped into girls from adjacent circles and offered to buy them tequila shots. They drank, they spilled, they grazed hands, hips, legs, any body part available. I didn't know where to look. My senses were going berserk. Fiora led us to the back of St. X, where we spiraled down a nondescript staircase into a basement of sweaty chaos.
I'm gonna get drinks, Trent yelled.
The music in the basement was even louder than upstairs.
Scott, come with me.
We squeezed through the crowd to the bar, where three layers of drunk customers separated Trent and me from our drink orders. I thought maybe Trent would use his bartending expertise to con our way to the front, but alas, we waited with the masses.
So, what's with this new lady? Trent asked. It was a dare, I said. Fiora offered me $50 to pick someone up at the zoo. Classic Fiora.
Sure, but now she's acting weird around Jeanette. I don't get it. She's the one who invited Jeanette out tonight, and she's practically ignoring her.
Trent kept his eyes straight ahead, focused on getting us closer to the bar.
Fiora might play dumb, but she knows exactly what she wants, man. She's looking for a show.
I wasn't convinced it was that simple. Fiora had already gotten the show she wanted at the National Zoo. Why take it this far? I wanted to believe Trent, but he had a tendency to simplify Fiora's motives and misdoings. He'd assert himself on all matters Fiora, like he knew the girl better than she knew herself. Sure, they had been friends for a long time, and Trent was older and theoretically wiser, but Fiora didn't come across as the kind of girl you could just put in a box. There was nothing glamorous about the basement of Café St. X. To an outside observer, it might have looked like the sort of college party you fetishized growing up. But if you truly looked at the basement crowd, girls swinging their hips and guys bopping their heads to the beat, void of real energy, well, it was a sad scene. St. X felt like a sweaty sex pool without the sexiness. No one was really committed to their moves. Instead, they were hungry for action. Eyes wandered the dance floor, ricocheting off each other. Move a little to feign amusement, but don't forget to scan the room for a really good time. A new dance partner, a hookup, a fuck buddy. The love of your night at best. You can't spell St. X without sex. But if you try, you get ain't. And from early on, I knew, ain't nothing good coming out of this night. Fiora, Trent, Jeanette, and I huddled around each other in the middle of the dance floor, bouncing awkwardly to the music. Around 11, Fiora checked her phone and left abruptly, pushing through the crowd and running upstairs. She showed up 5 minutes later with two tall, older-looking guys.
"Everyone!" she screamed over the music. "This is Benji and his friend Quentin!"
I ducked my eyes immediately. I recognized Benji, bald, bearded, bikeless. He was Fiora's boyfriend, her TA. I was his accidental bike thief. Holy shit. The DJ played a remix of Every Time We Touch, and the beat rang through my body. It felt like someone had punched me in the stomach, which was a real possibility given the situation. Was Fiora trying to get me killed? That would explain everything. The stolen bike, and the pickup challenge, and the fake texts with Jeanette. All the way to her mood tonight. All those punches led to this one final knockout. Fiora was going to spill the beans to Benji and Jeanette, and they would rip me apart right here in the middle of the dance floor. This was the show she'd been rehearsing for all along. Sweat dripped down the back of my neck. Hell hath no fury like the basement of St. X, and it hath no devil like Fiora Buchanan. To my relief, Benji cared very little about meeting us. He gave a quick nod of acknowledgement, ignoring Trent's excitement.
"Finally, I get to meet Fiora's man!"
and Jeanette's extended hand. Instead, he wrapped his arms around Fiora's tiny waist and pulled her to a roomier, isolated corner of the basement. Quentin followed along. Trent turned to me and tilted his head. He must have just made the connection.
"Isn't that..."
I nodded slowly, closing my eyes to reset my nerves.
"Classic Fiora!"
Trent said. The volume dropped from ear-splitting to a more bearable loud when the DJ played a sultry, slower song. Some R&B mix I'd never heard before. Trent, in his infinite politeness, struck up a conversation with Jeanette. I zoned out quickly, peeking through the crowd for Fiora. I caught a flash of her dancing in between Benji and Quentin, swinging her hips to the music, creating ripples in her parachute pants until Benji grabbed onto her hips. I jerked my head back to Trent and Jeanette.
"We need to get our country back on the right track," Jeanette said, poking into Trent's chest. "We need to make America great again. Our founding fathers weren't crazy, they had values. We are a great nation because of those values, not in spite."
"Scotty!"
Trent slapped me on the back. "Another drink?" Jeanette announced she was going to the bathroom. Trent and I pushed to the bar.
"Holy cow!" Trent's eyes bulged. "Man, where did you find Jeanette? She's..."
I didn't hear the last part of his sentence. I asked him to repeat it.
"Insane!"
he shouted. He threw his arms to his side.
"Gosh, I don't know how we got down that slippery slope with the founding fathers and our nation's values. Oh, wait, I know how.
Because she's interning at the freaking Foundation for American Traditionalism. Fat! That organization's got its head so far up its own ass that they never thought to come up with a better acronym. She's a religious nut, Scott. A crazy, conservative, homophobic, xenophobic nutcase. I tried to be polite with her, you know? I'm a Christian and all for less government, so we're not worlds apart. But good Lord, Jeanette is on another level. But how is she xenophobic if I just know it? She's gotta think you're like Greek or Italian or something. That has to be it. You never mentioned the Iranian part to her, right?
I realized he was right, that it never came up. Most of my conversations with Jeanette until this point had been about zoo animals.
Good, Trent said. Don't. Better yet, we could ghost on her right now.
For some reason, instead of worrying about my standing with Jeanette, I thought about Fiora, dancing at the center of Benji and Quentin's universe. I was curious what her goal was for orchestrating this night, this puzzling plot, how the themes intersected and conflicted, but didn't actually make much sense together.
Nah, I said. Let's get our drinks.
On the way to the bar, I noticed these two guys standing on the sidelines of the basement. They weren't your usual wallflowers. Call them Backward Yankees Hat Guy and Washington Wizards Jersey Bro. They were clearly buddies, built and dressed like athletes, towering over a sea of girls. BYHG and WWJB stood shoulder to shoulder, their arms crossed like bodyguards. Every now and then, BYHG played ball. He'd scout out a girl he was interested in, eye his sidekick for approval, and then approach the girl and grind up on her. He was swiftly rejected 3 times in the short period of time that I watched. I couldn't blame BYHG. I couldn't even blame the male species. Everyone, and I mean everyone in that basement, was hungry for action. Especially Jeanette. Soon she started dancing with Trent, face to face. This was incredibly awkward to watch, because Jeanette was so into Trent's face, and Trent's face was less interested in hers, and neither of their bodies appeared to be into the dancing. So I swooped in and started dancing with Jeanette, which turned out to be a good call, because our faces quickly got closer and closer with each swing, until we were almost kissing. Kissing with our cheeks. Sexual tension escalating. Suddenly, Fiora appeared out of the side of my eye. "Cigarette?" she said to us, motioning a puff with her 2 fingers and wrist. "Oh, God, yes!" Jeanette cried. "What?" I looked at her like she'd admitted to being a Russian sex worker named Anastasia. Could Jeanette honestly have been so relieved to get out of dancing with me? Had I imagined our synchronized motion? Her hands on my hips? Her eyes and my eyes meeting until they couldn't meet anymore because our cheeks were almost touching? All chemistry aside, I wouldn't have pegged Jeanette as a smoker. Fiora, sure, but Jeanette was too practical, too smart, and according to Trent, too rooted in her values. Trent was down for a breath of fresh air, so we stepped outside, and Fiora offered the 3 of us cigarettes. I politely declined. Fiora smiled when she got to Jeanette. "I didn't think you smoked," she said.
"Intermittently," Jeanette replied.
She couldn't have sounded less cool with her word choice.
"I've made the decision to rebel a bit this summer. We aren't allowed to drink at Liberty, for example." She smirked boozily.
"Tsk, tsk, Liberty University," Fiora said. "So you're Christian?"
"Yes," Jeanette said, matter-of-factly.
"You know he's Muslim," Fiora said, pointing at me.
Killed. She was for sure trying to get me killed.
Jeanette gawked.
"No, I did not."
She paused, and slowly another smile crept up on her face. Jeanette rubbed my arm robotically.
"I suppose I'm rebelling again."
I couldn't help but puff my chest proudly. Trent was wrong about Jeanette. She might have been a conservative white Christian girl, sure, but she wasn't xenophobic. She was an intelligent, reasonable human being, and she was into me. I glanced over at Fiora to make sure she noticed Jeanette's hand on my arm. We stood outside St. X a little while longer, Fiora and Jeanette taking casual puffs of their cigarettes, until Benji popped outside. He scolded Fiora for treating herself to a fine serving of lung cancer,
and ushered her back into the bar. Jeanette blushed at the mention of lung cancer and threw out a cigarette. Honestly, that was how I saw it, too. These two girls bonded over a shared disregard for their health.
You want lung cancer, too? Same. Twins.
But the way Benji came right out with verbal punches, it was like he accepted Fiora and belittled her at the same time. Conflicting, crisscrossing, confused. The plot thickened. The bar was even more jam-packed when we re-entered 5 minutes later, which meant only one thing. Café Saint X was for sure made of some fourth state of matter. A special blend of solids, people, liquids, alcohol, and gas, body odor, came together in this hellhole to form a state where you could pack infinite 20-something-year-olds into a confined space as long as they were drunk enough. And boy, were they drunk enough. On our way back down to the basement, I had beer spilled on me twice. Even the most revolutionary states of matter don't protect against party fouls. Trent announced he was going to the bathroom, which I took as a cue to get back to dancing with Jeanette. It was all right, and this time we made out. I'd made out with exactly two girls before, my eighth-grade ex-girlfriend, and a few times with Annie Choi at some parties last year, and they both complimented me on my soft lips. The problem was Jeanette. She kept suction-cupping my mouth with her thin, fishy lips. She played tonsil hockey. She did not know how to kiss. Every now and then I'd stop kissing Jeanette and just nuzzle my face against hers. Not only was this a break from our exhausting make-out session, but it gave me a chance to peek across the room at Fiora. She kept alternating between dancing with Benji and Quentin. They were passing her around like a basketball. At one point, she was sandwiched in the middle of them, their hands clasped together over her head. I later learned this move was a variation of the Eiffel Tower. Fiora didn't look thrilled or sad or exhausted or any emotion in particular. She looked empty, as if dancing in between ghosts. To be clear, it wasn't just me eye-stalking Fiora. Our eyes met exactly twice. Both times I apologized profusely with my expression, and both times hers just stared right through me. We deflect eyes quickly, like two magnets of the same polarity. Then I lost her. I looked into the crowd, and Fiora was nowhere to be found. I told Jeanette I was going to the bathroom, and I went looking for her. I searched every corner of the basement, the area by the DJ booth, the upstairs bar. Nothing. I knew I had no right to be annoyed that Fiora left without me. The past hour should have been forewarning enough. I just hoped she was okay. I came back to find Jeanette somehow drunker than when I'd left. The guys she was waving goodbye to had probably bought her shots while I was gone, because the ever-articulate Jeanette was now slurring her words.
"Scott,"
she said. That was a new one. Admittedly, I was a little turned on.
"Let's get out of here,"
she said slowly, suggestively, but with full conviction. Drunk conviction. That had to be a thing. Things were winding down at Café Saint X anyway, so we pushed through the crowd and left. On our way out, I caught sight of BYHG and WWJB. I was happy to see that one of these players ultimately found success on the court. WWJB, the sidekick, scored big time. He ended up dancing with a tall, beautiful Indian goddess while BYHG stood against the wall checking his phone. Alone. I chuckled. Only in the most special of sweaty basements can Robin prosper over Batman in a blaze of carnal glory. Outside, Jeanette asked in more or less words,
"What's your plan now? Because you should come back to my place."
An ask-turn suggestion. I politely declined, making up some excuse that involved my non-existent roommate. Well, technically I had a few roommates, Swedish this time, but none of them were sick and in need of my immediate attention. Whether she believed me or not, Jeanette nodded, and we agreed to hang out again soon. I put her in a cab and made sure the driver knew exactly where to take her before I hailed one for myself. The cab cost me a lofty $12. $8 for the fare,
and four for tip. I probably didn't need to tip that much, but I did it for good karma. I fell asleep hoping Fiora was okay. Chapter 16. The morning after St. X, I woke up feeling surprisingly alive. My head felt a little heavy, and my breath could have used a toothbrush, but it was nothing like my first hangover, when my body ached like I'd rolled out of a drying machine. Maybe I was getting the hang of drinking. Trent had texted me to make sure I got home safe. He also had good news. He talked to his boss and got me a part-time job at Tonic. Success! I could help out behind the bar a few days a week, starting today. I didn't hear from Fiora or Jeanette that morning. Not like Jeanette had my real number. But with Fiora, half of me just expected her to be there. You know, sitting on the other top bunk, waiting for my hungover ass to wake up and freak out about her intrusion. I smiled until I remembered the last time I had seen her, in the basement of St. X, trapped in the Eiffel Tower of Benji and Quentin. What did Fiora see in Benji? From what I could tell, he was more of a soul-sucking parasite than a boyfriend. I wondered if Fiora was curled up in bed now with Benji, or if she decided to mess with him again. I thought about BYHG and WWJB, and I pictured Fiora wearing the backward hat, the basketball jersey, the backward hat with the basketball jersey. These images all flooded my mind. I stopped myself, switched gears. I picked up my phone, scrolled past Fiora's number to find Jeanette's, and texted her. Hey, it's Scott. Different number. If Fiora was going to shove Benji in my face, I decided I might as well pursue Jeanette. After all, she was interested in me. How often did that happen? I added, had fun last night. Let's hang out again. A minute later, I went back and texted Fiora the same thing. I rolled into Tonic later that morning. The atmosphere inside was eerily calm. There was a family sitting in the back of the restaurant and a couple at the bar, picking apathetically at their omelets and roasted potatoes. It was a sleepy Sunday brunch scene. I couldn't imagine why anyone would choose to have their first meal of the day, of the week, at a place that's usually packed with drunk, sweaty college students. I would rather eat at McDonald's. Trent was cleaning up behind the bar. I walked up and slapped my hands on the bar top. Ready for duty! I shouted. The bar top was wet. The kind of wet that forms rivers between your fingers. I tried shaking the wetness off. Ha! Sorry, bud, Trent chuckled. Just cleaned the bar. Kind of a dirty rag, so you might want to wash your hands. It's okay, I said. I came here to get my hands dirty. All right, my man, but you should still wash your hands. He pointed at the sink behind him. Here. I slid under the bar's lift-top entrance to join Trent on the other side. I felt powerful behind that bar, like when I used to be a patrol officer for my elementary school bus. All the patrols at Deer Valley Elementary wore neon belts with shiny gold badges, giving us full authority over nose-picking bullies and cliques of popular girls. I didn't truly appreciate this power at the time. I mostly did it for the pizza parties. Bartending was hard work. Trent put me on dish duty, so I spent most of the afternoon picking up dirty glasses and washing and drying them. My palms were prunes by the end of it. Later, Trent showed me how to serve a couple of drinks. Simple ones, like beer on tap and the gin and tonics Fiora loved so much. We gave away my practice drinks, and I got solid reviews from my customers. Probably because they were drinking for free, but whatever. Just after closing, Trent and I started cleaning up. He took dishes, and I wiped down the bar top with the same brownish rag as before. You know, I said, I always thought there was something sexy about working in the service industry. Don't get me wrong, I worked hard today, but I feel good. My parents never let me get a job like this. They always wanted me to focus on school. Sounds like terrific parents. Eh, I shrugged. I never really bought their "we worked hard so you wouldn't have to wait tables" excuse. They were overprotective. Trent shook his head. Man, shut up. It sounds like your parents wanted the best for you, plain and simple. The rag was getting too filthy to effectively clean anymore, so Trent went back to get another one. Except he didn't give me the rag. He finished wiping down the bar himself. Hey,
I said. Why do you have to work anyway? I thought you said your dad did business with Fiora's? I assumed Trent came from a wealthy family.